ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 4, The Atrocities of King Kamsa, Text 2.
Te tu turnam upavraja, devakya garbha janmatat, achakyo bhojarajaya, yad udvigna patikshate. Te,
all the watchmen.
Two,
indeed.
Durnam,
very quickly.
Uparaja,
going before the king.
Devakya,
of Devaki.
Garbhajanma,
the deliverance from the womb.
Tat,
that child.
Achakyu,
submitted.
Bhojarajaya,
unto the king of the Bhojas Kamsa.
Yat,
of whom?
Udvigna,
with great anxiety.
Pratikshate,
was waiting for the child's birth. Translation. Thereafter, all the watchmen very quickly approached King Kamsa, the ruler of the Bhoja dynasty, and submitted the news of the birth of Devaki's child. Kamsa, who had awaited this news very anxiously, immediately took action. Purport. Kamsa was very anxiously waiting because of the prophecy that the eighth child of Devaki would kill him. This time, naturally, he was awake and waiting. And when the watchman approached him, he immediately took action to kill the child.
Om Ajnanachirananda Sagananjana Shalakaya Chakshurmilitamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudevi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
The scene is becoming very tense. The news is out. Devaki's child has been born. That moment has come in which everyone is waiting, especially Kamsa. Kamsa has been absorbed in the pinnacle of Krishna consciousness, but in a negative way. Still, he is absorbed in thinking of Krishna, even though he's always thinking, Krishna will appear and kill me. I must kill him. But his paradox was, I must kill someone who can't be killed. He knew Vishnu can't be killed. At the same time, he's thinking, I must kill Vishnu. So his computer was locked up. he was just caught in this paradox. I must kill Vishnu, but Vishnu can't be killed. Just on and on. This thought consumed his existence. So this is Krishna consciousness, but it is not favorable Krishna consciousness. Favorable Krishna consciousness means to always be absorbed in how to give pleasure to the Lord, how to satisfy the senses of the Lord. Negative Krishna consciousness means you're always thinking of Krishna, but you're thinking how to kill Krishna, how to get rid of Krishna. So Kamsa was, he's a great example of how to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness, but not the right way. Still, the acharyas give him credit for being unfavorably Krishna conscious. And in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni, noting the intense asarika bhava, this demoniac absorption, he says, if only I could love Krishna with the intensity that these demons hated Krishna, then my spiritual life would be perfect. A devotee can see inspiration for spiritual life in so many things. So Narada Muni is doing that. He's looking at the careers of the greatest demons. Just like in the working world, you may examine the careers of the greatest CEOs, the greatest business magnates, and try to get inspiration. In spiritual life, we look and we try to see examples that will increase our absorption in Krishna's loving service. And Narada Muni is doing that. He's looking at Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, Shalva, Dantavakra, the greatest demons that interacted with Krishna directly. And he's saying, notice their intense absorption of the consciousness in being anti-Krishna. Oh, if I could only love Krishna with that kind of intensity, then I would be a real devotee. This is humility. Learning from everyone and everything how to serve Krishna. For example, sometimes when I'm flying, if I'm flying Singapore Airlines, that airline is very famous for having such first-class customer service on the flight. The famous Singapore girl flight attendants, they're actually very low paid and disposed of after 1 year of employment. But anyway, you don't understand that by looking at the adverts. So, there are many of them compared to other airlines. They have many flight attendants. And they're just looking at your face. If you just move your eyebrow, they come up to you. Yes, you wanted something? They're just studying all the passengers' faces throughout the whole flight to see if you just move if you twitch a muscle in your face indicating that you desire something. And they're right there. Yes, 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 yes. Can I help you, sir? So, watching that, it teaches you how to serve Krishna. You think, if only I could be that responsive and attentive to Krishna's service, then I would really be Krishna conscious. Can you just visualize yourself walking around the temple and just seeing things that need to be done and having that available mood? Yes, yes. We talked about that yesterday, the sevamukha attitude of being available for the Lord's discretion, whatever you like. So, Narada Muni, he's noticed this in demons like Kamsa. And with true humility, he's not just saying this, oh, I wish I had the intensity they have. No, he's actually feeling that. Oh, my Krishna consciousness needs to increase. Just look at how much these demons were absorbed in hating Krishna. Look at their intensity. My love is so feeble compared to that. So Kamsa is a real classic case of how to be Krishna conscious, but we don't follow his unfavorable attitude. He's pacing the floor. He's in complete anxiety. He's definitely up at night, without a doubt. This is the night, and he knows it. Destiny is going to appear. He's thinking, I have to kill Krishna, even though Krishna can't be killed. Now, what are his henchmen, the watchmen, doing? They're employees. What is the nature of an employee? To faithfully serve the master because you're getting paid, you're getting a salary. So as soon as it was apparent that Devaki had a child, the child's crying was filling the house, immediately the watchman,
very quickly approach the boss.
Because they're paying.
And they inform him, Devaki's just had her child.
This indicates the dynamics of life in the material world. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami explain this. They presented themselves as fallen to Lord Chaitanya. Why? They said, we've accepted the employ of materialistic persons. Therefore, we must be fallen, even though we were born in such high-class Brahmana family, Saraswat Brahmana family. Still, we know we are fallen because we were employees. You might think, well, what's wrong with being an employee? Everyone needs a job. You get a good job, you get a good salary, it's the perfection of life. What's the problem? Why are Rupa and Sanatan Goswami presenting themselves as fallen just because they were employees? After all, they knew Sanskrit, Persian, Arabic, so many languages. They were great scholars. They were also great devotees. When they would go home from work, they would go to their private abodes. Sanatan Goswami had designed his abode just like Vrindavan. He had a kund there, and he had Brahmanas reading Bhagavatam to him all the time. So then you say, why does he present himself as fallen? Just because he was an employee. What's the big deal? There's a point to it. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami presented themselves like that to Lord Chaitanya to emphasize the point that as soon as you accept someone's employ, then you're at their beck and call. And in order to get your paycheck, you do anything. To preserve your position, to increase your salary, you're always alert to do that. Just like the watchmen here, they're very alert. The baby's born. Let's sell Kamsa. That's our job. So, employment puts you into that kind of mood, generally. You have to act to satisfy someone's senses. And you're acting to please your senses because you want the paycheck. So, in this way, you become compromised. And that is the point of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. We became compromised. We gave up our independence, which is very essential for a Brahmana. We gave that up to accept a paycheck. Therefore, we are fallen. Never mind our birth, what kind of family we were born in. Never mind our great learning. It's all insubstantial when you take into account that we accepted the employment of low-class persons. Therefore, we are also low-class. They actually considered themselves to be like Mohammedans because they had accepted the employment of Mohammedans. That was their humility. But there's a very instructive point to their humility. Now, does that mean that no one who is practicing Krishna consciousness should take a job? No, that's not the point. The point is to understand the practicalities of this world and how to deal with them. This world is a contaminated place. It is not just our playground for fulfilling ourselves. It is not simply our playground for experimenting with our desires, our achievements. It's not that at all. It is a place saturated with contamination. Therefore, one has to know the art of how to live in this world and still remain free from pollution. This is why bhakti yoga requires guidance. It's like learning how to stay dry while living underwater. It practically seems impossible. But it can be. You can learn this under proper guidance, and that is why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you want to really understand bhakti yoga, you have to have guidance. Otherwise, it's very difficult to practice the pure spiritual life in the polluted material world. Now, how does one escape the inevitable pollutions and contaminations that accrue because of a compromised position, because of working for someone else? That situation is purified by giving the fruits of the labor for Krishna. That protects you from the huge burden of sinful connections, sinful contaminations that naturally come your way as you move about in the material world. So bhakti yoga is very ingenious. It is high tech. It relieves you of all the toxins that you will accumulate. There's nothing you can do about it. Just by sacrificing for Krishna. It's very important. One who acts simply for himself, herself. All for me. All for advancing my cause, my purposes. You're also claiming so much contamination. But if you simply yajñavai Vishnu, perform yajna for Vishnu, then you are protected. Then your work becomes something else. Just like Arjuna's fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. His labor became something else because he was sacrificing the results for Krishna. That's why Bhagavad Gita is contained in the scene of a battlefield to show you that if Arjuna can remain free from contamination by fighting a war, certainly you can do it, even though you're under someone's employ. Bhagavad Gita is a very provocative example that even a warrior is immune to reactions from killing if Krishna is the beneficiary of the sacrifice. Very powerful example. We have to think about that. We can't have like a foolish, naive notion of what it's like to live in this world. This world is not a neutral place. There's some good people, there's some bad people, but generally it's okay. You just have to make your way through it all, achieve your goals, fulfill yourself, and then give up this body and leave something for your children, and you've done your job. Where are you going when you give up the body? Don't worry about that. Just leave something behind you for your descendants. When I was 14 years old, my father, he was wanting to have some discussion with me. You know, men, they take pride in, you know, talking to their children when the children get older and having meaningful discussions. And so I wasn't that communicating. So my father would try to prod me, like, what do you think about Vietnam? Let's have a discussion, son. What do you think about the president? Let's have a discussion, son. And I would just kind of sit there. And then he would kind of, you know, get a little annoyed with me and say, son, you can't just be a spectator in life. Life is not a spectator sport. You've got to get into it. What's your opinion? Then my mother would come. Just leave him. Just leave him. So, one time my father sat me down and said, son, I've understood what is the goal of life. The goal of life is to just leave some tracks in the sand behind you when you're gone. I said, oh, I don't understand, Dad. You leave some tracks behind you when you're gone, but shouldn't we first figure out where we're going? Son, you don't understand. You just don't understand. Why are you making life so complicated? I said, the whole point is just to leave some tracks in the sand once you're gone. I kept saying, but Dad, I'd like to know where I'm going after I leave the tracks in the sand. Oh, that's not the point. The point is, do something that people will remember you for. Leave an inheritance behind for your children. Make a mark on this world so people will remember you. And then you can just leave in peace. Whatever happens after that, who knows? That's not the point. The point is the footprints in the sand. So, then I, even though I was 14 years old, I said, okay, we'll forget about where we're going after we leave the footprints in the sand. But also, footprints in the sand are easily washed away, blown away. What about that? People forget you so easily.
Son, that's not the point. At least you did your best to leave some footprints. And once again, my mother came, you know, and he rescued me. Leave him alone. Leave him alone. Why are you pushing him like this? So, life
is not just our playground for achieving our goals and fulfilling our ambitions, and then we leave a little, in legacy behind for the children, for the family members, have a little fame, and then we move on. That is not the purpose of life. We're meant to fulfill Krishna's desires. First, we have to understand what is Krishna. Our most solemn occupation is to understand the science of God. What is God? Then we'll feel obligated to act in relationship with God once we understand what is God. The whole purpose of bhakti yoga is to train your senses for experiencing God. That is the whole point. That is our actual career. We may do things to do the necessities of supporting the family. That's all right. In the songs of the great Acharya Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sings, I will earn money to support your family, Krishna. It's your family. I will certainly earn money to support your family. So if it's Krishna's family, that means what goes on in the house is for Krishna's pleasure. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also sings, I'll become like a dog at the door of your house, Krishna, and I'll protect your family. I'll be a watchdog outside the door of your house and your family. He's placing himself as a servant of Krishna in all circumstances. It's not simply those in the renounced order who are the servants of Krishna. No, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sets the extraordinary example. So much so that he sings when he's offering arti in his home to his household deities, Shiddha Bhakada Charana Renu, Bhajana Anukula. As he's offering arti, he sees his house turn into Vaikuntha. That shows you the potency that's available in bhakti yoga. And he was in the employ of the British government for so much of his life. But he understood how to avoid contamination. And he demonstrated that example for others to follow. First, we have to understand a practical engineering analysis of this world. It's a place swirling with contamination. It's not your playground for achieving your personal ambitions and desires. I would like to do this, and I would like to do that. Remember, most of you, when you were young, 8 or 9 or so, didn't your parents always ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? Yeah. Definitely my parents did that. As soon as I became 7 or 8, my mother was getting books from the library. Your future as an investment banker. Your future as a chemical engineer. She'd get all these different career books. I was just 7 years old. And then she'd say, read them and tell me, what do you think? So I would just read the books and, wow, chemical engineer, playing with chemicals, that sounds nice. I want to be a chemical engineer. Of course, later it turned out I wasn't good at all in science and math. But anyway, I was just 7 years old and, wow, I want to be an engineer. I can just see myself in a factory turning dials and pressing buttons, making chemicals come together. Yeah, that sounds fun. I want to be a chemical engineer. So, unfortunately, most people don't grow up from that foolish ambition stage. They think this world is their playground for me to fulfill myself and to find someone to walk with in my journey of life. That person will fulfill me. I will fulfill that person. Together we will fulfill each other, and we'll fulfill ourselves individually too, of course. On and on and on it goes. Dreaming. If you're in a contaminated place, your main concern is to avoid catching a disease. If I say, go to a spot in the world where there's a cholera epidemic, the first thing you'll think is, how can we protect ourselves? Do we need shots? Do we need inoculation? How can we keep ourselves from being compromised by the rampant disease? That's the first thing you'll think. First of all, you'll say, do I have to go there? But it may be business, and your employer says, it's part of the job. You have to go there. Don't worry. Modern science will protect you. So what can you do? You have to go. So first you try not to go. Then, since you have to go, you take all precautions. Should I get inoculations or not? Are inoculations good or bad? You'd be investigating on the internet all the different feedbacks and discussion groups, what to do. And then you would prepare yourself and you go and you'd be on guard at all times. And then as soon as you get back, you go for a medical checkup, make sure you didn't pick up anything strange. Well, this is the attitude required to live in the material world. Once we understand that, then we can start to become serious about Krishna consciousness. Once we understand the actual dynamics of material life. It's a contaminated place. Srila Prabhupada, of course, understood that so clearly. Therefore, he said, I'm building places of pilgrimage in India so my devotees who are doing missionary work around the world, they can come and get purified from the inevitable toxic effects they pick up while preaching because this world's a contaminated place. So he practically understood how to protect his transcendental employees. But we don't have often a proper understanding of this world. We have this cavalier attitude, just freestyle, yes. What do I want? What would I like? And this way we become totally unmindful of all the contaminations that one must pick up, especially when you are employed. Because you're compromised. You have to satisfy someone's senses. Now, the point is not to drop employment. The point is how to spiritualize this situation so that I'm protected. To spiritualize the situation, Krishna has to have an interest in the situation. So your job is to arrange that Krishna has a share. Krishna has an interest. And then the work becomes transformed to the degree that you are directly trying to please Krishna with it. This is the wonder of Bhakti Yoga. Now look at these watchmen here. They're under the employ of King Kamsa. Obviously they're taking pride. How quickly did we get to Kamsa's room and tell him? Immediately we did it. And then Kamsa's waiting with anxiety. And he doesn't hesitate. He immediately takes action. When it's something for our sense gratification, we're very quick. When it's something for Krishna, now we have to be careful. You just don't know. You can be doing too much devotional service. You could be giving too much to Krishna and putting your life out of balance. But when it comes to sense gratification, well, that's always required, and Krishna understands. When it comes to devotional service, be careful now, be careful. After all, Krishna already has everything, so how much more does he really need? We start analyzing Krishna's needs, you know. Can you give us a financial statement, Lord? That's our attitude. Careful. Strategic. Cagey. But when it comes to ourselves, I'll let it all come instantly, immediately. I deserve it. So this is Kamsa. Immediately takes action, showing you actually how to serve Krishna in an indirect way. We want to immediately take action for Krishna's pleasure. Then our life is happy. When you immediately take action for the right thing, then you're properly situated. And we all know how to act immediately for something. You can't deny it. The bhakti trains us to be sensitive to Krishna's desires. The devotee is always praying to the deities, please make me more sensitive to what you want. I want to serve you, but I need instruction how to serve you better. That's the devotee's daily prayer. That is how to be an employee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You always place yourself at the disposal of the Lord and beg, I want to serve you. I need more instruction how to serve you better. I am available for your disposal. Now, in the next verse, we see Kamsa, he's jumping out of bed. He's ready for action. He's actually been awake anyway. He jumps out of bed and says, here is Kala, the supreme time factor, which has taken birth to kill me. So overwhelmed, his hair scattered on his head, he at once approaches the place where the child had been born. Here is Kala, the time factor, the supreme time factor, which has taken birth to kill me. He knows what's going on, but still, he's not going to surrender. He knows time is going to kill him, but no, he's going to kill time. This is why Kamsa is such a classic neurotic case. He knows he can't kill Vishnu, but still he's going to try. Okay, you might say, well, how can you blame him? He's got to protect himself. So, let's hear Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word Kala is significant. Although the child was born to kill Kamsa, Kamsa thought that this was the proper time to kill the child, so that he himself would be saved. Kala is actually another name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he appears only for the purpose of killing, when Arjuna inquired from Krishna in his universal form, who are you? The Lord presented himself as Kala, death personified to kill. By nature's law, when there is an unwanted increase in population, Kala appears, and by some arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, people are killed wholesale in different ways by war, pestilence, famine, and so on. At that time, even atheistic political leaders go to a church, mosque, or temple for protection by God or gods, and submissively say, God willing. Before that, they pay no attention to God, not caring to know God or his will. But when Kala appears, they say, God willing. Death is but another feature of the supreme Kala, the supreme personality of Godhead. At the time of death, the atheist must submit to the supreme Kala. And then the supreme personality of Godhead takes away all his possessions, Mrityu Sarvahadashtaham, and forces him to accept another body, Tata Dehantara Prapti. This the atheists do not know, and if they do know, they neglect it, so that they may go on with their normal life. The Krishna conscious movement is trying to teach them that although for a few years one may act as a great protector or great watchman, with the appearance of Kala, death, one must take another body by the laws of nature. Not knowing this, they unnecessarily waste their time in their occupation as watchdogs and do not try to get the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As it is clearly said, Aprapyamam Navartante Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. Without Krishna consciousness, one is condemned to continue wandering in birth and death, not knowing what will happen in one's next birth. Kamsa wants to kill time, but how can you kill time? He's up against an impossible force, yet he's determined. I've got to do something. I've got to save myself, even if it means killing the child of my sister. I refrained from killing her before, but this is too much now. The number 8 child is born. I have to act. Never mind how abominable the activity is. I've got to do something now. We can learn from his speed in action, his executive response. I've got to do something. Of course, his concern is simply how to save his own skin. But his own skin cannot be saved. Now, in the purport, Prabhupada makes the interesting point that when there is an unwanted increase in population, Kala appears. What does it mean, an unwanted increase in population? He's not referring to the quantity of the population. He's referring to the quality of the population. When too many unqualified persons enter this world, then there is a reaction from material nature. That surplus of unqualified persons is the fault of those who parent such children. They bring into the world unqualified people, and then they wonder, where's world peace? Where is love? I was talking to one guest yesterday. He had come to our program 2 years ago at RMIT, and then he came to talk to us yesterday. He's becoming a bit famous in Australia, getting his own TV show in Melbourne like that. So he was telling me, he's a motivational speaker, and he goes to detention centers, colleges in Melbourne, and tries to motivate the kids not to do crimes. So he was telling me he was at a detention center, and the staff at the detention center said, oh, you think you're a motivational speaker? We've got someone for you to motivate. We'll tell you about this 14-year-old guy here. He killed his own grandmother and then assaulted her. Can you motivate him? So I said, well, I'll give it a try. And he went and he asked the 14-year-old boy, why did you do such an abominable thing, killing your own grandmother and then assaulting her? So he said, well, I was just taking a lot of drugs, and I just became crazy, and I was angry at the world, and I just lost it, and I did that. What kind of child is this who's been brought into the world? No, he wasn't Vietnamese, he wasn't an Asian, he was Australian. This is what he did. You wonder, what planet, what hellish planet did this kid come from? But this is what is happening when parents bring into the world unqualified children. Therefore, there's a reaction from nature to cleanse the earth. And then everyone blames God. What are you doing? If you exist, how could you do such a thing? No one looks in the mirror at themselves and thinks, why are we polluting the earth with unqualified children? So therefore, the scientific information is given here. When there is an unwanted increase in population, when the world is full of low-class children, Kala appears, and by some arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, people are killed wholesale in different ways. And then everyone becomes submissive. Oh, is there a God? Who can teach us about God? And that's very good for our preaching. Just like when we had our annual management meeting here in Melbourne, maybe 6 years ago, I remember there was a representative of the Catholic Church here, and he said, the statistics show that there was a huge waiting list, a huge queue to be a monk or a nun right before World War II, because everyone was just fried. We just had World War I. And then we had the League of Nations, all these endeavors to make sure such a catastrophe never happened again. And now, a short time later, we're on the verge of World War II. What kind of world is this? I can't handle it. So many people wanted to become a monk or a nun. The Catholic Church had a long queue. They would sift through them. Well, you know, you yes, because they didn't have enough space for everybody, so they got very choosy. And then after World War II, the same thing happened. Long queues to be monks or nuns. Can you believe it now? Now you wouldn't believe it. But the people were thinking, we've just seen horrors in World War II, such atrocities committed by human beings to one another. I've had it with this world. I want to be a monk or a nun. So long waiting list just to enter the monastic life as a monk or a nun. Then the 60s came, he said. The time when the Hare Krishna movement took off was the worst time for the Catholic Church. Their enrollment plummeted because, you know, who wants to be a monk or a nun when there's just free everything everywhere? Free love. Young people didn't want to be a monk or a nun then. It was fun time. Free indulgence everywhere. Of course, the Hare Krishna movement took off in that climate, especially aided by circumstances of young people looking for a deeper meaning to life. Of course, the real reason is Srila Prabhupada's purity. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada was very shrewd about circumstances. He knew his market at the moment. How can we fault the Supreme Lord for allowing distress in this world when it is a fact that when there is distress, people become more reflective? They start thinking. There's been a scientific study of calamities done by one of the modern fathers of sociology. He was the first chairman of the sociology department at Harvard University. He actually did a study of humanity's reactions to calamities. He did it statistically, and he found out that when there's a great calamity, the population polarizes. Some go to the saintly side more, and some go more to the demoniac side, but the middle breaks apart. No one stays in the middle. Either go more pious or more demoniac. He's documented this. He's one of the greatest sociologists, but now he's forgotten. Because he was too theistic. In the 40s and 50s, when he put out his books, the New York Times was heralding him as one of the greatest thinkers of modern time. Now he's completely forgotten, because the conclusion of all his books was, unless people become God conscious, there's no hope for civilization. So now he's forgotten about. He's history. Yet, he did these scientific studies showing what happens when calamity strikes. It was a thick volume, Man, Society, and Calamity. And he just showed people become more pious or they become more demoniac. The wishy-washy middle falls apart. You go one way or the other. Polarization. That was very interesting. So how can you blame Krishna for allowing so-called distress in this world, when the actual main distress is our lack of God consciousness? But no one is concerned with that. Kamsa is just concerned with saving his own skin. Therefore, with hair scattered on his head, he's approaching the newborn child. He immediately knows what to do. I'm going to kill this baby. Devaki is going to protest, but he's not going to listen to her. He's going to grab that baby by the legs and try to smash the baby's head against the stone wall. He's doing all that he can to protect himself. He doesn't care about reactions. This is the current spirit of the day. Do what you gotta do. That's all that can be done. Reactions, well, we don't see any reactions. Everyone's doing like this anyway, so what the heck? That is the current standard. Now you have to ask yourself, do you want to be a part of that kind of civilization? Is that going to be your life? It will be, unless you take firm steps to protect yourself against contamination. You have to understand the dynamics of living in the material world, of accepting employment, and then situate yourself properly. In this way, you can actually make progress even while living in the dense darkness of Kali Yuga. You can have the illumination necessary for going back home, back to Godhead. Any questions? There are various levels of God consciousness all around the world. As a human being, our responsibility is to get the most comprehensive understanding of God possible. So, you'll see fragments of God consciousness everywhere. There's no doubt about that. But we want to understand Krishna. That is a rare thing. And what happens if you understand Krishna? In truth, you don't see another material body. So this one had a little bit, that one had a little bit. Whether it's Martin Luther King or King Luther Martin or whatever. There's little fragments available everywhere. But we're looking to understand Krishna, the all-attractive. That's the rare thing.
What kind of question is that? I'm born up Roman Catholic, and I'm an Australian Catholic squad. You know, I thought about joining the convent myself. So I thought. The difference between Christianity is atheism.
What you can do after class, you can talk to one of our devotees here, and they'll be able to answer your question in depth. Okay? Yes, yes. Yeah, it's a good point. Thank you for your question. Yes. Any other? Yes?
Is there such a thing as degree of karmic reaction?
Degree?
Karmic reaction.
Well, if you, just like in the mundane sense, if you kill someone, that's a more severe crime than if you steal from someone. And so the punishments are weighted accordingly, similarly. The law of karma is like that, but the law of karma is not the product of the limited intelligence of human beings. The law of karma is much more accurate and precise. You can escape man-made law, but you can't escape the laws of karma. Unless you approach Krishna. He says, come to me, I'll protect you from karmic reactions.
Yeah, I was thinking of, you were talking about employment, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, like, if the person is working in an industry, but he's far removed from the source of, you know, the violent physical activity, would he accumulate less karma than the one who is closer to the source of...
Yes, just like in a crime. Someone who pulls the trigger and kills someone gets more of a reaction than the person who supplied the gun. Still, they're all part of the conspiracy. The police will go after everybody, but they won't penalize the one who supplied the gun as much as the one who pulled the trigger. But still, everyone's implicated. Okay? Yes.
Maharaj, would you like to tell us something about Antarang Shakti? Antarang
Shakti. Another class, okay? Yes.
Sometimes you find those who will be working in a situation where they might, say, be an accountant for an organization that's doing it. An example I know of was somebody working as a systems analyst for Tabcorp, which is the betting agency. What kind of consideration will we give in terms of our principles? We know that betting is engaging in the gambling.
Right.
We're just trying to end up with accounts, for example.
It'd be very hard to find employment these days is not related to sinful activity. The object is to avoid direct involvement with sinful activity. But everything is polluted these days. You may be working for Holden and thinking they're just making cars, but maybe with their profits they've invested in slaughterhouses. Usually, that's the way it is these days. You just don't know. So at least you can make sure that you're not directly involved in activities of sinful activities. You're not taking the bets at the window, you know. But everything is polluted these days. Therefore, it's very important, yajna vai Vishnu, to perform yajna sacrifice for Krishna. If you keep everything for yourself, you'll suffer. That's the sure way how to go down. Because you are not able to withstand all that contamination present in Kali Yuga. You're foolishly taking it all on yourself. Let me have it all because I want the paycheck. I want to be happy. But if you give to Krishna what belongs to Krishna, then you can be protected. Because families have to support themselves. What can be done? But if Krishna's in the center of the family, if the family's dedicated to Krishna's interests, then that is something else. There was a case in Ukraine recently. Solanus Naranja Maharaj was telling me about it. One of his disciples works for an advert agency, and he's very good, good reputation. So a meat company approached him, said, "We've heard your reputation, we know about your agency, and you in particular, we want to give you a lucrative contract for, you know, making our slaughterhouse ads." Say, "Oh boy." You know, if you just refuse, you know, it like ruins your career, you know, the word gets out. You know, people are wondering, "Hey, you got such a lucrative opportunity and you refused? What about your agency that you work for? What about your future? Are you cuckoo or something?" That's how people think. "You're so fortunate." So he figured a way how to deal with it. They asked him for a bid on their proposal, and he made a super high fee. This'll take care of them. You know, they'll never go for this. And then they got back to him. "We accept." Oh no! Right, so, but he's still racking his brains what to do. So then he's praying to the deities, you know, because he has a family, you know, he has to make his way in this world. At the same time, he's a devotee. So he came up with this idea. He managed to convince his fellows at his agency, "I'm so busy, I don't think I can handle this job." So then what he did was he referred the slaughterhouse people to another advertising agency. And it worked. His mates at work in his agency didn't, you know, get suspicious. He's really overloaded. He's great talent. People are knowing that. They're approaching him with too much work. We don't want to burn him out. So he got away with that one. So he referred the people to another agency. Then he got a phone call from the other agency. "We are so happy that you've given us this huge referral with the contract already negotiated for a very tidy fee. We're going to give you 15% commission." Oh, God. This is a true story. What am I going to do now? You know, how do you turn down a 15% commission, you know? No one will ever be able to understand that. So then he asked his Guru Maharaj what to do. And so his Guru Maharaj told him, "You take the commission and you give it to the temple for use on things that are unquestionably for Krishna's pleasure. Not even devotees' salaries, nothing. For the deities or for purchasing Prabhupada's books. That's it. Then it'll be purified for sure without a shadow of doubt." Because he couldn't avoid, you know, and the financial recompense from this deal. There's no way he could avoid it. He was just falling in his lap. "Take it, take it, take it." He tried every possible way. Well, that's an example. Yeah. Yeah, he could take it now. But he did his best to avoid it. And then he took guidance. What to do? I mean, this money is just being stuffed into my chest. I mean, I've tried to avoid it in so many ways. It's sinful money. So then his Guru Maharaj said, "You accept it and use it 100% for things that are unquestionably for Krishna's pleasure. Don't give it to the temple construction fee because devotees are maintained who work for construction. So there could be some. Use it for something that is without a doubt 100% for Krishna's pleasure, and the situation will be purified." So they used some of the money to buy Radha Krishna Murtis from India for future installation, and the rest of the money they used for buying a big stock of books to distribute. So everyone was happy. There was no contamination. He was happy, the devotees were happy. So, and somehow that Krishna covered over his fellows at work. They didn't question. They just thought, "Oh, your reputation is getting so great. Work is just coming to you." Things like this do happen. Anything else?
What about shares? Lot of people buy shares.
Mm-hmm.
Do they also take things, or do they make profits?
Everything is sinful unless it's engaged in Krishna's service. Why just shares? Everything. Mm-hmm. Even having children is sinful unless it's engaged in Krishna's service. Why you pick on shares? Everything. Even leaving an inheritance behind for your offspring is sinful unless the situation is engaged in Krishna's service. There's nothing innocent in this world. Everything is problematic.
As you mentioned, when there is an unwanted population, and there is mass, large-scale killings, opposing killings happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened. And in that process, many of the innocents get killed.
Innocent? Who is innocent?
Relatively?
Look in the mirror. If you see a material body, then you're not innocent. That's the test. You're guilty. If you see a material body in the mirror, and you understand, I've taken birth in this world, it means no innocence. There's no such thing as an innocent child. It's just a matter of time before the sinful desires packed in the body come out. There's no innocence in this world. Okay? Yes? No, devotees should not avoid having children. I haven't seen that go on anywhere. What is the principle given by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita? Dharma Varudo Bhuteshu Kamo Sri Bhadatarshava. Krishna says, I am that procreative activity when Dharma is followed. That's what Krishna says. So devotees should have as many children as they can raise in Krishna consciousness. And that number varies from couple to couple. Sometimes it's none. You have to be honest. Sometimes it's one. Two. If you can raise that child in Krishna consciousness, then the activity of procreating the child becomes service to Krishna. Krishna himself says that. But you have to be honest. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was very honest. He said, if I could bring into this world Krishna conscious children, I would have hundreds of children. But he didn't have one. He was a lifelong brahmachari. But you have to be honest. Not just become overpowered by material nature. You have some desire to have another living entity in the home, like a rabbit, you know. Why is everyone laughing? I don't know. No one here does that, right? you want your own little rabbit. A human rabbit, soft and cuddly, you know, looks just like you. You have to have a better desire than that. You have to have a desire of service. Let's bring into the world a Krishna conscious child that can benefit the whole globe. Then Krishna accepts that. If you follow the regular principles, Krishna says, I am that activity. Some of you have experience in that. I don't. But Krishna says it, therefore I say it. I heard Prabhupada say, I don't understand it, it's not my ashram, but he said, you can experience Krishna in this way also. What can I say? Do things in the Krishna conscious way, there's a Krishna conscious result. All right? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to the Prabhupada.